afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Tuesday, April 5th, 2022. Good afternoon, Dave. Hello, Dave. I think we might have lost our connection, or he has muted the mic, as we often... Okay, so I'll go ahead with a market report today. We have gold. There was some pressure on gold today, down 1260 at 1921. Silver's down 29 cents at $24.33. Platinum was down $22 at $973. And palladium was down 66 at $2,282. So the whole sector was hit. Well, I think a lot of it is sometimes, again, if you have a big drop in some of these in one particular area, like palladium was down 3%, even had platinum down 2%, it can bring the rest of the sector down for a little bit, too. So it's the whole thing gets hit. And I think that's pretty much what we're seeing today. Although the dollar continues to get a little bit stronger, 0.54 at 99.52. Crude oil was down $3 today, holding right at 100. And the USDX today, the Dow loses 280 points, 34,641. The NASDAQ dropped 2%, 2.25% to be exact. Now all of these important investors are fearing the Fed rate hikes are going to slow the economy. So the NASDAQ was at 14,204. The S&P was down 1.25%, 57 points, 4,525. Asia was positive. Europe, the FTSE was the only one that was positive. Everything else was negative by almost 1% and above. And the 10-year yield continues to climb at 2.56%, 2.56%. So I'm not sure if we got Dave back. I guess we don't, so he must be having some other issues. So we're just going to talk a little bit about what he wanted to talk about today. And the first topic that he had was Zelensky. And there's the Ukrainian President Zelensky spoke to the UN Security Council earlier today that focused on what videos and photos suggest the deliberate killings of civilians in Ukraine. He had some disturbing videos that followed his speech, and a lot of these were discovered after the Russian forces pulled out of Pushka. That was a suburb of the capital, Kiev. And so he addressed the UN today, and after it received briefings from UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres, and the story goes on and on. And I mean, it's just a matter of time until he pulls the West into this war. You know, I don't care what NATO says, we're going to get pulled into it sooner or later, Dave. What say you?
Well, I don't know.
Welcome back.
Hey, thank you. Sorry, I just got kicked off, and I don't know what happened, but I'm back. You can hear me, everybody?
Absolutely.
Oh, good. Well, it's further events like this, and boy, he's playing with fire, but I'll tell you, it could be that Putin's goal in this horrendous behavior, all these killings of civilians and apparently going door to door in some of these suburbs now and literally executing able-bodied men, could be for just the reason you speak of, Melody, to draw in the West. At some point, some particularly in Europe are going to say, you know, enough is enough. Sanctions aren't affecting his behavior, sending him military equipment ammunition. He's not changing his behavior. Perhaps we need to show him what we really got here. I still think that's a ways off. Because, again, there's a lot of potential consequences, intended and otherwise, that could result from the West becoming involved in this quagmire, Melody.
Well, it really is. And, you know, and I don't even know. I mean, it's a terrible thing. But you know what? When did anybody think that war is nice? You know, and awful things happen. You think in this day and age, you know, we all thought we were past that type of a situation and so forth. But, you know, and I know you're going to disagree with me, and I'm not making a point here, but I just remember when this administration came out in the beginning, even before this all started, when they were priming people, saying of you're going to see, you know, false flags created by Russia. And you're going to see dead bodies and pictures and, you know, this and that. And that's exactly what we're seeing. So I'm not sure, you know, how do you, you know, we know they want to change the regime. And we know we're, you know, the U.S. is famous for changing regimes, and they'll do whatever they have to do it. So I just don't, it's a very confusing, it's a terrible thing. It's a horrible thing. But I'm not quite sure we're getting the truth of it all. And it is to bring us into the war. And, you know, you can argue various points. Where is our national interests? Well, when it comes to, you know, having a war, and we can debate, you know, what is the national interest, if there is one, and where do we draw the line? And becoming involved and everything that happens around the world. So it's you just see, and they are, you know, these pictures are powerful, and it moves everyone. But I'm not ready to have a nuclear war with Russia over Ukraine. You know?
No, me neither. And you know, speaking of false flags, you got this smack. But Russian UN ambassador Vasily Nebenzia, who today accused Ukraine and the West of a false flag attempt to blame Russian troops for atrocities that he charged were committed by Ukrainian nationalists. He called that widespread video of bodies lying in the streets of Bushka a crude forgery. And insisted that during the time that Bushka was under Russian control, not a single local person suffered from any violent action, saying that Russia would present further, quote, factual evidence to the UN Security Council. Well, one thing about that, Melody, the U.S. has already presented satellite photos, you know, assuming they haven't been doctored.
I know. We just don't know in this world. And that's the problem, Dave. We just don't know in this world anymore.
Yeah, but you gotta have some semblance of faith.
In our governments? No.
Well, come on. I mean, it can't.
No.
It's not all bad.
I have no faith in our government. When we've been lied, when we get lied to all the time.
Not everything that's said is a subterfuge. I reject that out of hand. And you know, I don't know where you stop and how you know for sure. But, you know, the fact that there is evidence that these were taken from satellite photos, and it's the same evidence, the same as the evidence of the killing shown by journalists on the ground. I mean, the fact is that Putin can't hide from the truth, and that evidence of these war crimes is growing.
I believe when you have war, there's atrocities. I mean, yes. I mean, things going on, and it's just a matter of to the degree, and are both sides playing a part. But if it wasn't for the internet, and if it wasn't to the technology, and if it wasn't to the degree of illusions that have been created over the years over various things and the way they want people, Yeah, I would probably have to go along and say, yeah, I probably agree with you. But with technology and what they can do, we don't know. I mean, you have to question just about everything, though. And then you have to draw your conclusion. But I think everything, particularly when this is something that's so, you know, it's dangerous to everybody. And, I can't, you know, to the lengths that we have seen in the past when it comes to wars and so forth, what's willing to be done and not, it's frightening. And because you don't know, Dave, you know, and I agree with you. I'd like to have a little more faith too, but unfortunately, it's for something like this, it's hard to have that faith. And he's going to get more sanctions. There's been 27 diplomats that have been expelled from the Baltic states. The European Union has proposed a ban on coal imports from Russia, and what would be the first European Union sanctions targeting the country's lucrative energy industry. The European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen said that the EU needed to increase the pressure on what she described as heinous crimes. The ban on coal imports is worth about 4 billion euros. It's about 4.4 billion U.S. dollars. And the EU has already started working on additional sanctions, including on oil imports. She didn't mention natural gas, though. And with consensus among the 27 EU countries on targeting fuel used for electricity and heat homes, kind of difficult to secure amid opposition from the gas-dependent members like Germany, Dave. So they just have not been willing to target.
No, I don't know where Germany makes up for 40% or so of its energy needs if they dump Russian natural gas, even liquefied natural gas from the U.S. and Canada won't make up for that, and it'll be more expensive. So that's a tough call there, and I don't know what the landscape is there geologically for oil and natural gas. On their lands, on European lands, I know there's more untapped resources, I think, on the UK. I don't know. I presume that, and of course Ukraine is off the maps in this regard. But their dependence, Europe's dependence on foreign oil, Russian oil in particular, just makes the unanimity on any energy measure a real tall order. And the European Commission Constitution says, you know, decisions like these require unanimity, all 27 agreeing to it. And with Germany's veto, that's going to be, I think, real tough to overcome at this point.
Well, you know, the Russian, again, the default has been brought to the forefront. We have the U.S. Treasury blocking dollar-denominated debt payments from Moscow. The move last night prevents the Kremlin from paying holders of its sovereign debt with the more than $600 million reserves that are held with the U.S. Financial institutions. So it's aimed at forcing Russia to either use up, of course, more of its own stockpile of dollar reserves or accept a first debt default in decades. Sanctions imposed following Russia's invasion on the 24th have already frozen all foreign currency reserves that are held by the Central Bank of Russia with the U.S. banks. Before, the Treasury Department did allow Moscow to use those funds to meet coupon payment obligations on its dollar-denominated debt on a case-by-case basis. You know, and it is, you know, I'm glad the Treasury Department in the past permitted someone to use their own funds. But go ahead, you know.
Well, you know, you got this half a billion dollar principal payment on a Russian bond maturing soon, an $84 million coupon payment on a 2042 sovereign dollar bond came due yesterday. Treasury added that Russia must choose between draining remaining valuable dollar reserves or new revenue coming in or default. The spokesperson added that the drawdown in dollars would further deplete the resources that are available to Putin's war effort and trigger even greater uncertainty in the Russian financial system. Well, I'm not sure what he's doing at his long desk, if, you know, what's been going on so far, plus today's announced additions are, you know, making him turn in his chair, Melody. But it doesn't appear to be having too much of an effect on billionaire Vlad at the moment.
Well, I read once that he was the wealthiest man in the world.
Yeah.
And
makes you think, makes you wonder.
Yeah. And the key to it is, I don't know how many dollars, you know, how it would impact or what type of a domino effect it would have. Supposedly, most of that money is held within Russia. Most of those that's coming due is, you know, money held in Russia. But there is some outside. And I don't know. I mean, if you're talking about $20 billion or $30 billion, we've gotten so, I don't know, billions here, billions there, doesn't mean anything. You know, when we're talking about trillions and trillions of in debt and so forth, billions is just a, you know, a couple pennies. But does it have an impact? Does $20 billion or $40 billion that might be held outside of Russia, does that have an impact on the banks and those holding? I don't know. We'll find out if he decides to default. And I think it's a big risk. I think they're betting that he's not going to default, but I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see what type of impact that it might have. I mean, this is the first time he's defaulted. This is the first time Russia's defaulted on foreign debt, I believe, since 1918 or something like that.
Yeah, well, it could certainly have an effect on who invests, who supports their sovereign debt in the future, and certainly the interest rates that Russia's going to have to pay to finance that.
And I hear the music. It's time to go for a break. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk CSCTalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at DGScoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com. dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for a weekly newsletter and blog. And Dave, I think the news of the day, everyone is waiting. I don't know if he released the information yet. I know there was supposed to be a big press conference today. Is Tiger Woods going to play in the Masters?
That's the word.
He's going to play, it was announced?
Well, he officially was on earlier. I watched it. I mean, he wasn't explicit, but he said he talked about the challenges, the physical challenge, the emotional challenge of doing 18 holes at Augusta over 4 days. Plus practice rounds, he said, but he said he was looking forward to that. So it told me, well, it looks as of now he's playing, but I guess we'll know more as the week progresses.
Well, it really is amazing the amount of, I mean, what he's done was incredible. I mean, but, you know, he does have probably the best doctors in the world. It's amazing what you can do when you have good doctors. You
and
don't
a lot of money.
Die.
Yeah, superhuman.
Yeah. But you know what's interesting? Before we head on and talk a little bit about inflation, I just saw the headline come out that Deutsche Bank, of course, I'm not a fan of Deutsche Bank. I mean, they're right on all the time, aren't they? But here they're forecasting a U.S. recession, and they're the first big bank to do so. And they say it's going to begin late next year. I don't think we're going to have to wait that long. I think it'll be a lot sooner than late next year.
Yeah, you know. A lot of signs. We'll talk about it in the next segment. Are pointing to something in the coming months, not year and a half plus.
Yeah, I mean, that is a year and a year. Well, maybe if it's a year and a half away from now, that recession won't last longer than a month like the last one.
Oh, there you go.
You know, so we'll have this recession in the meantime, but we're not going to declare it a recession until we're coming out of it in a month.
Yeah, I mean, it's, that's like, okay, thanks for the notice.
Yeah. Well, you know, we talk about inflation a lot. Gets a lot of attention, and we all pay attention to it when we're at the grocery store and we're at the gas station. And I've actually been noticing last night I took a drive into, it was about 6:30, and the streets were kind of bare. It was kind of creepy. So when you're out driving around, pay attention and see if you think it's a little bit more quiet than usual on your roads at 5, 6 o'clock when people are getting off work, going out to dinner. The restaurants, and yes, it was Monday, but the restaurants were empty too. So I just thought it was a little odd. And so the CPI that measures a wide-ranging basket of goods and services, that surged 7.9% in February from 12 months prior. Prices are going up on everything from the food you put on the table, as I mentioned, the gas. And 48% of people are thinking about rising prices all the time. That's kind of sad. 48% thinking about rising prices all the time. Three quarters are worried that higher prices will force them to rethink their financial choices in the coming months. Inflation is costing the average U.S. household an additional $296 a month. This is what, according to Moody's Analytics. And there hasn't been a significant impact yet on consumer spending. I think it has. Retail sales grew slower, at a slower pace than had been expected in February. Biggest area people have cut back on is dining out, with 53% say they've done so. They're also driving less and canceling monthly subscriptions, among some other things. And if higher prices persist, you know, dining out, driving, trips, vacations, they are the top three areas that people plan to cut back even more, Dave.
Yeah, I mean, look, we know the past year, year and a half has been tough for many Americans, many people across the world. 52% in this survey said they're under more financial stress than 1 year ago. They're most concerned, not surprisingly, about gas prices, housing costs, which have prevented many, especially first-time homebuyers, from enjoying that American dream, and of course, food. In the last year, gas has spiked nearly 40%, shelter up 5% seems low, and food prices increased 8% on average, although some are up 25-30%. Meanwhile, a group of Americans are unhappy with the response from the White House, with 61% disapproving of the way the president is handling inflation. The current environment has a majority of Americans worried about a recession, with 81% believing one's likely to happen this year, Melody. Moody's Mark Zandi, Moody's Analytics, that is, says people are definitely on the edge. Recession risks are high. He puts the odds at 1 in 3 of a recession and rising, although he didn't say just when.
No, you never would.
Yeah.
Very noncommittal.
He predicts that inflation will peak around May. And by this time next year, it will be a lot lower, depending on how global events play out. As well as how the Fed responds.
Mm. Well, you know, good old Fed Governor.
Speaking of which.
Yeah. Well, old Fed Governor Brainerd, that she usually favors a kind of a loose policy and lower rates. Well, now she's saying, hey, the Fed needs to act quickly and aggressively to drive down inflation. She said policy tightening will include a speedy reduction in the balance sheet and a steady pace of interest rate increases. Her comments indicated that the rate moves could be higher than the traditional increments of the 0.25 percentage point. Current inflation is much too high and is subject to upside risks. The OMC is prepared to take stronger action if indicators of inflation expectations indicate that such action is warranted, she said. Fed already has approved one interest rate. Of course, we know this. And it was the first in 3 years. And likely one of as many 6 or 7 this year, Dave.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if indeed the other side of this, the drawing down of it's $9 trillion in assets, mainly treasuries and mortgage-backed securities on its balance sheet, which she says will be swift beginning at its May meeting or soon after. So she did say she expects the balance sheet to shrink considerably more rapidly than in the previous recovery, with significantly larger caps and a much shorter period to phase in compared with 27 and 2019. Back then, the Fed allowed $50 billion in proceeds to roll off each month from the maturing bonds and reinvested the rest. So after seeing and hearing the market reactions to that drawdown and essentially liquidity, if they're talking about doubling that amount and fastening that pace this time around, we'll see to what extent the markets have already priced that in. I'm skeptical myself. I think seeing is believing, but I think in this respect, seeing could be a shock to that system. So I expect good things for gold, all other things being equal, in the coming months.
Absolutely. They're between a rock and a hard place. They know it, and all their little chitter chatter and, you know, debates about this and that, and raising interest rates to fight inflation. As soon as they start raising interest rates to fight inflation, then you got all these governments and corporations that can't service their debt. So they're going to be screaming, but they, you know, they keep going into debt deeper and deeper and deeper. So I'd like to see what the current debt for corporations, you know, the increases on that. I haven't seen that for a while, but, you know, and they all fudge. You know, it's all fuzzy math, even the Fed. Well, you know, throughout 2020, Powell repeatedly testified to Congress that the banks in the U.S. had proven to be a source of strength. Last Thursday, the Fed released the names of the banks and dollar amounts they had needed to borrow under some of the Fed's emergency loan operations. The data showed the units of two of the largest depository banks in the country, J.P. Morgan and Citigroup, had required vast sums from the Fed's emergency repo loan operations, as well as its primary dealer credit facility, or PDCF, primary dealer credit facility for short. In the Fed's first report to Congress on the PDCF, the Fed reported that the total outstanding amount as of April 14th was $34.5 billion. That was April 14th of 2020. Last Thursday, the Fed released the names of the trading houses that received these loans at the friendly loan rate of 0.25%. It showed that at the end of the first 11 business days of operation, the Fed had an outstanding balance in the PDCF of $49 billion. So, you know, the trading unit of the largest bank in the United States, J.P. Morgan Chase, which usually brags about its fortress balance sheet, they had to borrow $14 billion. $14 billion, they had to borrow 28% of the total. So not only did the Fed not report the larger balance of $49 billion to Congress, but it withheld it from its weekly H-4-1 balance sheet statements as well. Why hide the primary dealer credit facility information from Congress and the public? Because the trading units of Morgan and Citigroup were also borrowing vast sums of money from the Fed's repo loan operations at the same time they were borrowing billions. You know what? If it wasn't so, this is, you know.
I know. It's a joke.
It is.
But it's a bad joke. And another major embarrassment for the Fed is that when the emergency repo loan operations began in mid-September 2019, remember, several months before there was any reported case of COVID in the U.S., perhaps the fact that there was an emergency loan operation that began then reinforces what Melody was saying back then, that, hey, there's already a recession. This recession didn't start in February 2020 and end a month later, or started in March 2020 and ended a month later. Perhaps it was because you know, they knew something that they weren't telling. Well, in any event, the Fed reported that the emergency repo loans were needed because U.S. corporations had withdrawn large amounts from the banks so that they could make their quarterly federal tax payments. And that had created a big liquidity gap in the financial system. Why it just so happened to be then and, you know, not before, not after? Well, that's another question.
How can you not pay your quarterly federal tax? How can you borrow money to pay from the pay quarterly tax payments? Did they get fined? I mean, it's just absurd.
No,
right?
It's crazy. I mean, an analysis by Pam and Russ Martin showed that three of the six largest borrowers from the Fed's emergency repo loan operations were the trading units of foreign global banks. Nomura of Japan, Barclays of the UK, and Deutsche Bank of Germany. Now, does anyone really believe that U.S. corporations were putting a serious amount of their corporate tax payments into foreign banks? Something, I mean, similar and yet still unexplained occurred with the PDCF. Over the full life of that program, from March 2020 to May 2021, three trading units of foreign banks received nearly half of the total for all 16 trading houses that participated in that program. BNP Paribas Securities received $1 trillion. Deutsche Bank Securities, $940 billion, and Royal Bank of Canada Capital Markets, $633 billion. A total of $2.6 trillion there, ladies and gentlemen, of the total $5.8 loaned over the life of the program. My God, something is rotten in Denmark, and it needs to be fully explained to the American people.
Well, the only way it's going to be fully explained to the American people that they would understand is when the system crashes. Then they'll have an understanding.
This is what we've been telling
this
you.
Yeah. You know, it's been going over your head all these years and so forth. You haven't paying attention, but here we are. So now do you get it? You're right. It's the corruption. It's just a joke. And then you want to trust what comes out of our governments? In the Federal Reserve, out of the banking system. They're all a part of it. They all know what's going on. They're all covering their A's just to keep it afloat. You know, and wars are a big part of it. It's maddening. You know, just maddening. And that's the sad thing is, so how can you believe the crap that they give us all the time? But what you can believe is we're heading into a break, and we'll be right back because you're hearing it. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at DGScoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And one more time today, welcome back to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen, Melody taking care of clients this final segment. Stock buybacks, we talked about it last Tuesday, I believe, about how they're back and bigger than ever. And corporate bros and sistas have increasingly leaned on buybacks to keep their equity prices aloft. But yesterday, Starbucks, a big multinational, halted a plan to spend billions buying back its own stock this year. Big question now facing, once again, CEO Howard Schultz. Will Wall Street allow him to quit buybacks cold turkey? Critics of buybacks, including Melody and me, have said that the boom in share repurchases has eaten into corporate spending on wages and the kind of business investment that drives true economic growth, not the mirage of it. And it's a view that Schultz tacitly acknowledged in making the announcement. He said this, this decision will allow us to invest more in our people and our stores, the only way to create long-term value for all stakeholders. Schultz, by the way, just reclaimed the reins of the company. The Starbucks shares happened to fall almost 4% on Schultz's announcement. It's already been drastically underperforming the market this year. Now, the decision comes as Starbucks, which is heavily reliant on its 235,000 workers in just American stores, faces a historically tight labor market. Climbing wages, the company's largest cost, is eaten into profit margins. The company's high-end Reserve Roastery in New York's Chelsea neighborhood voted to unionize on Friday. It's the 10th location to do so over the past several months. So Starbucks' move to freeze buybacks also comes amid increased regulatory and political scrutiny of a practice that's become a cornerstone of the way American stock market functions. Gary Gensler's SEC has proposed new regs that would require faster disclosure of corporate stock purchases and more information on their justification. That's a start. The end of that should be just eliminating them altogether. As it turns out, companies themselves are and have been the largest buyers of stock in the U.S. markets. That's one of the reasons why. Too big to fail, Goldman Sachs estimates that companies will purchase $700 billion worth of their own stock this year, excluding new stock issuances, making them by far the largest purchaser of equities. Now, so far, Starbucks' move doesn't seem to have won it much breathing room from SB Workers United. That's the union attempting to organize the company shops. But Schultz is asking for patience from shareholders as the company attempts to sort out its labor issues and try to reinvigorate its stock price. We'll certainly see how it goes, and you know we'll be reporting in the coming months. Now, interestingly, the war, pandemic, and sluggish stock markets hit the world's billionaires this year where it hurts the most, their net worth. There are now 2,668 of them, at least on Forbes, 36th annual ranking of the planet's richest people. And that's 87 fewer. That's 87 fewer billionaires than a year ago. They're worth a collective $12.7 trillion. And that's $400 billion less than in 2021. The most dramatic drops have occurred in Russia, where there are 34 fewer billionaires than last year following Putin's invasion. And also in China, where a government crackdown on tech companies has led to 87 fewer Chinese billionaires on that list. Still, Forbes found more than 1,000 billionaires who were richer than they were a year ago. And 236 newcomers have become billionaires over the past year. Pardon me. Including the first ever from Barbados, Bulgaria, Estonia, and Uruguay. America still leads the world with 735 billionaires worth a collective $4.7 trillion. Including Elon Musk, who now tops the Forbes list for the first time. China, including Macau and Hong Kong, remain number two with 607 billionaires worth $2.3 trillion. Elon Musk, the founder of Tesla and SpaceX, tops this year's list at $219 billion. Amazon founder Jeff Bezos next at $171. Top 10 is rounded out by fashion magnate Bernard Arnault and his family at at number 3, Microsoft co-founder Bill Gates at number 4, the 129, Warren Buffett 5th with 118, Google co-founders Larry Page and Sergey Brin 6th and 7th with 111 bill and 107 respectively. Oracle founder Larry Ellison, number 8, 106 billion. Gates's Microsoft co-founder Steve Ballmer is 9th with 91 billion. And in the number 10 position is Mukesh Ambani of India with $90.7 billion. There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Now, just very quickly, read that Mexico's economy appeared to limp into this year, but factory-filled states along the U.S.'s southern border apparently are thriving. The country's exports surpassing $80 billion in just the first 2 months of the year. That's due to strong U.S. demand and a revival of the auto sector to some extent. Now investors are moving into Mexico, and banks there getting ready to finance new projects. Orders of non-petroleum goods grew by almost 27% in February compared with the year earlier. And if you're interested in cars, toys, or medical supplies, there's probably a company ready to ship through the world's busiest border. All of that not good, but not all of it bad. Mattel, the maker of Barbie dolls and Hot Wheel toy cars, announced plans to make Mexico the site of its biggest plant in the world, 3,500 workers. So good news there. Now, our latest American Survival newsletter has hit the streets. I have an article in there called The Inverted Yield Curve, as bond investors wondering if a recession is coming. Timely topic today. Neil Irwin of Axios asks, so when does a report showing a booming job market cause recession alarm bells to start clanging? Well, his answer is when exceptional jobs growth leads bond investors to bet that the Fed will raise rates so aggressively to quash inflation that it'll be forced to reverse course later. And that's what's starting to happen. It actually happened on Friday. When the bond yield curve inverts, as it did on Friday, it usually means a recession isn't too far behind. And although that's being a tad presumptuous at this point, it's clear the Fed's walking a narrowing tightrope. More Americans are rejoining the labor market, and wages are showing steady growth. Just 2 weeks ago, Fed Chair Jerome Powell said he sees a very, very tight labor market, tight to an unhealthy level even. The new numbers, however, suggest it's becoming even more so, especially around the government's headline unemployment rate. That means the job numbers amount to full speed ahead for more aggressive Fed tightening, including what looks likely to be the first half percentage point rate hike in 22 years at their early May policy meeting. That's why the jobs numbers on Friday caused an 8% jump in 2-year Treasury yields at 2.46% heading into last weekend. Longer term yields rose by less, with tenure ending the day at 2.38. Thus, the inversion. When long-term rates are lower than their short-term counterparts, that's the inversion. It's like bond investors are betting that the Fed will end up reversing those near-term rate hikes down the road, i.e. lowering them again, presumably because of a weakening economy that will result. Despite the steep rise in mortgage rates we've seen recently, the housing market continues to be hot, and at least through March, generate a healthy stack of new jobs each month. Friday's strong employment report showed that almost 14,000 new jobs were created in real estate and rental leasing last month, after an average of roughly 11,000 a month over the last year. The last 2 years have been the busiest stretch of real estate job creation since the housing bubble was at its pre-bursting level between 2002 and 2005. When the pandemic hit in early 2020, we know the Fed cut interest rates to almost zero, mortgage rates plunged, and a household nation turned to Zillow, voila, an employment jackpot. But now the Fed's begun raising rates. The Fed's 30-year fixed mortgage has already exceeded 5%, up over 65% from just a bit over 3% at the end of last year. That fast rise could act as a brake on housing activity at some point, potentially slowing job growth in the process. Employment in residential construction fell by 2,600 people in March. That's according to the government, the largest drop in almost a year. And even more dovish members of the Fed's policymaking OMC are gearing up for more aggressive rate hikes. One of those doves, San Francisco Fed Pres Mary Daly, says that the case for 50 basis points, barring any negative surprise between now and the May meeting, has grown. New York Fed Pres John Williams added that the Fed's tightening will help bring demand for labor and products into closer alignment with available supply. The Atlanta Fed's tracker of markets' expected path of the Fed funds rate has the Fed policy rate peaking near 3% by next fall, that's 2023, before drifting downward toward 2.5% by the spring of 2025. I think that's all wishful thinking in both directions, but most economists are saying that talk of a recession are premature. I'm not so sure about that. We're going to have to wait and see. While the recent trend in bond prices do imply slower growth down the road, they don't necessarily suggest the Fed will overdo its tightening campaign so much that it will soon face an economic turndown, at least according to those economists. I think history suggests otherwise, ladies and gentlemen. The 5-year Treasury yield remains higher than the 2-year yield, which isn't consistent with a recession in the medium term, though. Irwin himself believes that markets are pricing in something similar to the Fed's mid-cycle adjustment rate cuts of 2019 that followed the last yield curve inversion. Still, there are wide error bands around those market estimates, and it's not as if bond traders have perfect forecasting ability, right? And we still don't know exactly what the economic cost of bringing inflation this high down is going to be. I guess, as Williams has said over the weekend, one of the things we've learned from the pandemic is to expect the unexpected. Thus, ladies and gentlemen, I expect the uncertainty and volatility to continue. Now, in the remaining roughly minute and a half or so remaining, there's a new report out from Oxfam that says today millions of Americans do arduous work and jobs that pay too little and offer few benefits. So these are the people serving food, cleaning offices, caring for young and elderly, stocking shelves, and delivering pizzas. The report says the pandemic exacerbated this trend, sending billions in pandemic profits to the very wealthy, while millions at the other end have lost ground. As this divide has grown, the wealthiest people and companies have gained disproportionate power in our economy and government. In other words, low-wage workers have seen their access to power and their ability to influence dwindle. And just like poverty itself, this disparity isn't inevitable. It's the consequence of our policy choices over many years, both public and private. And nearly a third of the American workforce, 32%, is earning less than $15 an hour. Roughly 52 million workers and their families. Now, this isn't me calling for the government to raise the minimum wage to $15 or more, but it is calling me for businesses, both public and private, to pay their workers a decent, livable wage. A little bit above poverty, at least. Far too many don't, but they sure as heck should. That's all the time we have for today's program. I'll return on Thursday. Please send any comments to daveallen.usa@yahoo.com. Butch will join Melody tomorrow with Wendy Wilson of Apothecary Herbs. Thanks, as always, to our producer, Todd, and to you, our loyal listeners, for tuning in to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Please be safe out there. Bye-bye. If I got me on